CliffCentral.com. Hey, right, we are live. It is a Thursday morning on CliffCentral.com. We've got Bugabuntu in the studio joining us for the Burning Platform. We had to coax him into doing this, but he's decided he'll be part of it this morning. And we've also got a guest popping by a little bit later on who I'll tell you about in just a short moment. There's lots in the news that we need to talk about, including the car power ships. You heard about these? These Turkish ships that are coming? That are going to supposedly help us to figure out how to sort out our Eskom power issues?
Yep, but we don't want them, right?
Well, apparently it's just a big, environmentally destructive, dangerous. They park off the shore. These terrible people run the thing. It just sounds horrible.
But come on, the one I know about, right? The Turkish one is. I think it's parked off in Kabeja, PE.
Oh well, then
who cares about that?
Exactly.
The beaches are full of sewage.
That's a good point.
Beaches are full of sewage already, so we might as well park an obscenely stuff that's going to power the people.
I don't think that's a problem.
That's a net benefit, right?
I think so. So you're already. He's climbing in. He's coming in hot. Bugabuntu, look at this. Already lots of opinions floating around.
I'm wondering why he had to be coaxed into this.
Because he wasn't sure that he could
hang.
Be honest. You were worried. First of all, you were terrified of Pumi because you know that she she tears people to pieces on this show.
Exactly.
That's the first thing.
I do
thing.
Not.
Like this show should be called Pumi's Burning Platform. She's the prime master.
The poor woman from the ANC Youth League the other day. She's going to get back. I mean, not the ANC, the EFF. She's going to get back to the EFF meeting, and she's going to be in such trouble. Speaking of the EFF.
The list was put out yesterday. A very long list was put out yesterday. I think it's got about 400 names on it.
These are the people who Julius says has not performed, right?
These are the people who did not procure buses to get their constituents to the celebration on Sunday. Because yesterday, 26th of July, was the EFF's actual 10th birthday. They're having a big celebration on Sunday, I think, FNP Stadium.
That's the one she invited us to, the VIP section.
It was for the poor, Gareth, and everyone is the poor.
In this country, everyone is the poor.
Listen, she did say, why were we not asking about invitations to the event? Because she wanted to give us VIP tickets. Should be the same.
I thought everyone was the poor, though. Even the cigarette tycoon is the poor.
Well,
yesterday
this is why South African politics is so complicated, Bugabuntu, because people talk one game, but they walk another.
Thank you.
So the fact that there are going to be VIP areas at a socialist party's birthday party just proves to you what George Orwell tried to teach us in Animal Farm, that some animals are more equal than others.
The book ends with the sheep looked from left to right and right to left, and they could not tell the pigs from the humans. Mm-hmm. That's how Animal Farm ends.
Well, you decide who the pigs and the humans are. But exactly. I'm very glad that we had the EFF on the show. And I said this at the time, and people were very angry that we were so nice to her. But we have to get these guys in here, and we have to talk to them. We had some proper arguments. Right?
But I think we are nice to everyone.
I think so. I don't think we're horrible.
No, we're nice to everyone. But I do want to talk about this, speaking about who is more equal than others.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this developing story now that the 8 VIP servicemen.
I'm so glad you brought this up. People are so angry about this still. Rightly so.
Have now appeared for their first appearance in court on Monday. And the big revelation was that Paul Mashatile was actually in the vehicle.
You did. You did say that. No, full credit to you, Bugabuntu, because you did say, this is bullshit. That guy was in the car. He probably told them to do it, right?
And then the contortions since then, the bloody contortions.
Mm-hmm.
He came out to say that he was nowhere near the scene initially. And now he was there. He was in the car. And then everybody's favorite spokesperson, what is Secretary General?
Oh, Figile.
Yeah. Comes out to say, actually, yes, he was there, he was in the car, but the doors were closed and the car was running.
And he could have
never possibly known what it is that was happening outside. In fact, he thought the men were taking a comfort break.
Yeah, sure. Because when all your bodyguards get out of the car and
in the middle of
the highway, you think, oh, well, this is totally normal. This is fine.
It's a comfort break.
What a lot of nonsense. Do they think we're as stupid as
yes.
we think they are?
Yes.
Okay.
No, never attribute to malice what can be easily explained by stupidity, right?
You are right.
Handlon's razor. But like, I called Fiki, what's this guy's name? Paul Mashatile. He was there. He probably ordered it. That was a hit because he runs it like a mafia boss. We've known this for a while. Him and Ace Magashule are old gangsters, including Didi Mabuza. They are literal gangsters.
They're gangsters. Okay, yeah. So here's the latest. Conga Chris says, the Blue Light Bullies have stated in their affidavits that they blame the media and the general public for their arrests. So it's not what they did. That's not a problem. It's that we are victimizing them.
Yeah, no, we are holding them accountable, and we shouldn't because they are kings and they run the country.
No, we should not be so mean. Why are we so mean? Huh? I mean, this is to me the most perfect example of when you know you're in a banana republic.
Yeah.
Is when the goons, because these are goons, the goons get out of their car and they beat up two members of the public. Now, whatever those guys did, because they're also trying to say, oh, well, they were driving suspiciously or they were coming down, we were told that they had guns, whatever. It doesn't matter what they did. You cannot. You need to be the smart one in this situation. If you're the VIP protection, you're trained and you're paid a ton of money. We spend close to R1 billion on just VIP protection services for these supposedly popular people in government in this country. We shouldn't be paying any of that. If they're so popular, they shouldn't need bodyguards.
You know what's funny, Gareth, right? One of the things we always laugh about, the South African government doesn't do everything right, right? But if you read a book by Mo Sheikh, and you also interviewed Mo Sheikh, right?
Yeah, we had him in here.
Yeah, Mo Sheikh, if you read his book, the intelligence is pretty – in South African intelligence is pretty good. It's astoundingly good. Zuma tried to destroy it, and he didn't destroy it. He actually used it to a means to an end. That's how he infiltrated and knew everyone's numbers
and whatnot. Yeah, he used it to collect those small Anyana skeletons.
To collect those small Anyana skeletons, and he built up a library. That's how he got everyone in that black book of his, where he can just call a number and then, yeah. And then the Guptas also had that black book. So we have great intelligence in South Africa.
I don't know. I don't know if I agree with that. If we did have such great intelligence in South Africa, then we would have been able to foresee the July riots in 21 coming.
I'm coming to that point.
And something would have been done to mitigate. If we did have such good intelligence, we would definitely be fully aware of all the nefarious activity that happens in this country. Whether it is the underground payment system that feeds money back into ISIS, which we've now got as a confirmed.
Really?
If,
this is happening.
Or
it's great,
the
huh?
multitudes of foreign national warlords, gangsters, drug dealers,
this place traffickers. This place is a haven for those people because no one's going after them, right?
No, but I think it's all strategic, says Pumi. We do have that intelligence. So this is purely anecdotal. I can't mention who I got this from, but this is someone very high up. He's an uncle.
See why we've got him in the burning platform today. He's got sources.
Yeah, it's an anecdotal thing. He says a week before the July riots, he's currently stationed in Durban. He says a week before the July riots, we were called in. He's like, Mchana, we were called into a meeting. We were there with South African intelligence. And then they were like, no, something is going to happen. We've been tracking calls. We've been tracking this. This is this movement, and we know this. But what they didn't expect is the amount and the casualties of that. They didn't expect the calamity of it all. But they knew it was going to happen. And Becky Cele purposely stepped away from it because it was all political, because he was on the other camp, and the other camp was supposed to take the blame. So we did know. And then in terms of the old ISIS and whatnot, again, Mo Sheikh's book breaks it down that Zuma gave. So when Mo Sheikh was running intelligence, he was at the top. So he had the final call. He had the red phone to call Jacob Zuma or the president at the time and say,
President gets a daily intelligence briefing.
So Mo Sheikh spoke directly.
I don't know if Cyril does. Cyril probably sleeps late.
So Mo Sheikh had a direct line to the president.
Early morning walks, it doesn't sleep late.
But what happened now during this time is that what Zuma did, he discredited intelligence by giving the number one, Mo Sheikh's number away. When Mo Sheikh said, I don't want to be speaking to Abdul Gupta about let's say, who's the guy who left with a bag of money from an apartment in the place, man. But like, so he doesn't want to speak about intelligent stuff with random civilians.
No, you can't. You shouldn't be allowed to. Levels of classification.
And then what did Zuma do? He went to the guy underneath, Mo Sheikh, and then he's like, I'm the president. I am telling you, give Abdul Gupta what he wants. And then that's how intelligence.
Atul. Don't call him Abdul when he's been our shadow president. You should know his name by now. Atul Gupta. Former president of South Africa.
Yeah. Exactly. So then Zuma proceeds to undermine our intelligence. And then that's how the Guptas got away with landing at Waterkloof and no one knew it coming. We know this stuff, says Pumi, but it's not broadcast.
But that makes it worse. If you ask me, that's worse, right, Pumi? Because we know about it and yet we are powerless to resist people actually taking over the machinery of state and putting South Africa at risk.
Yeah.
There is nothing that I can think of that is more important for a government than to maintain security inside and outside.
Absolutely.
Clearly, this is not something we can do. And it doesn't matter how good our intelligence services are. If nobody's listening to them, it's a waste of time.
No, that's the thing. The intelligence was co-opted by Zuma to drive a certain narrative.
Well, also co-opted so he could figure out who his enemies were and use that information against them.
That's what I'm saying. So it is good. So even Rika, to a certain point, is Pumi, like you were talking about, like monitoring.
All right.
Rika was proven unconstitutional and Rika was literally monitoring all of us.
Yeah. Okay, correct. I mean, they've probably got stuff on.
So you're telling me that intelligence is not good?
They've stored up a whole bunch of files on Pumi and you and I just so that in case one day we become a problem, they can release the files. All right. And I don't care. Go ahead, guys. Release whatever you want.
Put it on a big screen like in China.
Go for it. Yeah. Take away my social credit score. I'd be complimented if I was decided by this government to be an enemy of the state. Do you think that these explosions, like the one we had in Bree Street the other day, there was one in Kempton Park the very next day, there have been a couple of these things that have happened. Do you think that these are acts of wanton sabotage, or do you think that they're just unrelated coincidences?
So I do think that they are unrelated coincidences. And this is how the media works, right? Is when something is top of mind and exciting, because remember, so there was the Bree Street explosion, which...
Which, by the way, they still don't
nobody's
know.
Nobody's telling
Nobody's
us.
Saying how it
nobody's
happened.
Nobody's telling us what it is or how it happened or why it happened. But literally, the next day, there was an explosion in a house of a gas heater in Bramfisherville. That was reported on. Then Kempton Park. There was
it's like the tavern that drinkings and the murders.
We fall into the spiral. It becomes this is the fad of the week.
Yeah, it's in the zeitgeist. Yeah. Gas explosions are in the zeitgeist currently. It's the fad.
So this is an interesting question, and I think maybe there are a lot of people thinking about this too. Those weren't riots, says Congo Chris. Those riots of last year?
Yeah, before 2021.
2021.
Were state protected acts of violence as an act of intimidation by a former president? I think that's clear, but. No one's gone to jail, as far as I can tell.
No one's gone to jail, but even though intelligence
and
does
Jacob
know
Zuma at the moment is in Russia, as I understand it. Is this correct?
Yes.
Our former president.
But for medical treatment, Gareth. You need to classify for medical treatment.
Because, of course, despite the.
Jacob Zuma.
Despite the NHI being like the best thing ever and our hospitals.
We're assured that the NHI is a real winner.
Yeah.
But that must be put aside because our former president needs Russian medical care. Of course, it couldn't have anything to do with the fact that those are still his best friends in the world.
Exactly.
And that's also where former deputy president
Didi Mabuza
used
and
to
then,
go.
And then since Pumi speculated that it was a poisoning because Russia are poison specialists.
They are.
I remember that episode.
Exactly right. So I don't know how much of this we should take seriously and how much we shouldn't, but it worries me.
It's interesting that the former president is in Russia at the exact same time as there is a Russia-Africa summit happening in Moscow.
Exactly. He's there to broker something.
Yes.
Or he's there to sell something. He's there to sell more of Africa. So like before Zuma was deposed, right? One of the things that he was about to do, he was about to sell a huge chunk of KZN to China. So the way it was advertised by the ANC government, China's going to bring a brick factory to South Africa.
We were told this is the foreign direct investment.
But when you read the document, China was like, we're going to bring Chinese labor. They're going to build a little China in Durban and the currency will be whatever the currency in the yen and it will all go outside of China. We're literally just making this fact. We just need land. That's all we need. And Zuma was like, A-okay. And then that's how they got him out because he was going to sell his people. But again, Zuma was so great. But this is not like a bashing on Zuma and whatnot. But what I want to say to the explosions, I think it's a bit of both, says Pumi. I think it is coincidence, and I think it is, though, there is a correlation, but there's, what's the saying? Causation does not equal correlation. Correlation does not equal causation. Somewhere there. But so, the explosions can be attributed to one thing. They're not all related, but the underlying factor or the common denominator is that they are all due to some kind of negligence.
All right.
Someone is sleeping at the wheel.
I think a lot of people are asleep at the wheel, including our president, which, again, I'm
No, he's on that morning walk.
He's not on a morning walk unless he's walking in St. Petersburg, because he arrived in St. Petersburg last night for the...
I know this isn't really related to politics, but it probably affects more people's lives than we realize. And I think more people are interested in this story than they are in Zuma in Russia or even, you know, the intelligence services or any of that stuff we've discussed so far. Stephen DeLon has been put to... No, I try for a second to take me seriously. I've never watched Stephen DeLon. I don't know anything about it. I'm not a soap opera fan. But I think that South Africa has this long track record of being massively into soap operas. Mm. Our soap operas are the most watched TV shows in the country. They beat the news in every category. Mm. Across all LSMs, rich people, poor people, old people, young people, South Africans generally, we're one of the most successful export markets for foreign soap operas. And when we make our own, they're even more popular. Mm. You know, so Seven Alarm, which I've never watched, had to be axed due to poor management and the ongoing financial crisis at the SABC. Now, what's sad about this is every time the government is given something to manage, and this was always a state thing. It was started by the old National Party, the South African Broadcasting Services. They would do what they were told.
SAICA.
They would do what they were told. They would broadcast propaganda. Nothing really changed. There was a brief window. And I can say this because I worked there and I never had political interference until the very end. I was allowed to interview anyone I wanted. We could talk about anything we wanted to. Obviously, as Fresh and I discussed the other day, we weren't being watched like other stations. Like, they didn't want the black people to get the wrong information.
Yeah, it didn't matter
if middle-class blacks and middle-class whites who were listening to me and Fresh, it didn't matter if they got the wrong information because they already had the internet and blah, blah, blah. But if you can keep the poor people who actually watch SABC TV and listen to SABC radio, if we could keep them misinformed or propagandized, we'd be fine. Even that's fallen by the wayside. The SABC is like a giant, leaky, creaky cart where more is falling off of the cart than there is on it anymore.
And we keep putting the fruit back into the cart, and we're not seeing the big hole.
We don't, because South Africans, they can't collect TV licenses from us anymore, which used to be they used to try and
like you talked about this last week.
Try and morally.
Do you know how they
make us feel bad?
You know how they've been backdooring the TV license back in? They are what? They tried to hook it on
the
TSTV
thing.
No. Leave the propaganda. So after that propaganda failed, they tried to backdoor it through the DSTV subscription because more people are subscribed to DSTV. They tried to backdoor it through what else? Like people Netflix and whatnot. Because now they have an app, SABC Plus, because they realized
the whole reason I brought up the Seven Alarm thing, because we could talk about how stupid and useless the SABC are till the day ends, and we could run out of days if we actually went into the detail. I don't know who's in charge there anymore. I don't care. It's not important to me. The SABC I don't get involved in it in any way. My day-to-day existence does not have a single second dedicated to SABC television or radio anymore. But I am the exception. I understand there are thousands, if not millions of people.
Yeah, I still tune into SABC News because I tune into a lot of news. Yeah.
Yeah, but you're such a news nerd.
Yeah, this is pretty much like plugged in.
It's important. It's important to know not only what they are saying, but also what other people are hearing.
Fair enough. But if you take away one of the few things that South Africans love because it's been mismanaged, I mean, a soap opera is such an easy way for them to make money because the numbers of viewers are huge during those things. This may have been an Afrikaans. It had millions of viewers and they've canned it because they couldn't manage it properly.
Of all the things that Claudi did wrong, one of the worst things
was 90-10.
No, was actually selling SABC's back catalogue to MultiChoice.
Yeah, they did.
And I mean, if I, If I were a minister, one of the things that I think I would advocate for very strongly is to remove SABC from the DSTV bouquet. Because SABC, part of the reason why SABC is in such financial ruin is because they can no longer charge as much as they used to for advertising, because DSTV carries all that advertising.
Right.
And for media planners, it is just much easier to purchase media that can be disintermediated over a DSTV set of bouquets of channels. And they don't have a lot of advertising now either.
Also,
right?
what do people in the entertainment or media business in this country have to look forward to as far as opportunities go? I mean, we're a small business here. We can employ a very small handful of people. We can create opportunities for as many as we possibly can. But it's by no means as big as the opportunity that could exist for somebody who wanted to go and work when the SABC was still hiring people and training people and all of that stuff. It's not happening anymore. We're actually losing talent. I would even go so far as to say that Bophuthatswana Tswana did more during apartheid for media in this country than the SABC has done post 94 for that.
Well, Radio Bob for sure.
Bob TV. Listen, that was an incredible, and it was because Mangope had some idea of what he wanted to achieve there. So many talented people came out of that system. Some of them are still working in media today. They are sometimes the most important people in the media business today. And I think, you know, the SABC should be ashamed of itself. It's a shameful situation. And we're paying for it, which makes me even more angry.
So now to make it political, right?
Go on.
So the SABC, the mismanagement of the SABC, like ruining stuff, right? Number one, what they did is the 90-10 rule. Soap operas, very big in South Africa. What did they do? They eliminated Bold and the Beautiful. They eliminated, Days of Our Lives.
Days, yeah.
Biggest draws in South Africa, biggest eyes on SABC. Every day, everyone knew, right?
Right.
And then the Generations thing happened. That was more of a production thing, not an SABC thing, more of a production thing.
But again, should have been managed.
It should have been managed well, right? So they stumbled their way through this. So then we move on to all these things that they did. They implemented the 90-10 rule, but there's no funding for this stuff. No one tunes in for this stuff. So mismanagement all goes back to political, because what did we do? We deployed political cadres like Claudia Motsoeneng, who wanted, what's the thing? That thing.
That thing which you can never define properly.
Which you can never define, but he ruined it.
All right, well, we have a guest in the studio with us this morning. Let me quickly introduce him. Thank you very much for coming in this morning. Blessing is a very, very interesting man. He is Blessings Ramob. He is a political activist, accomplished engineer. He's got a wealth of experience in the mining industry, which is obviously a huge part of our economy in this country. And he currently holds a position of president and chief executive officer of the Mining Forum of South Africa. So you're a busy man. You have a lot going on every day. Nice to see you, and thank you for coming.
Thank you very much for inviting me, and good morning to you and to your listeners.
Blessings, tell me quickly, what is the state of mining in this country? Because we hear lots of people saying, oh, it's tougher than ever. The margins are so thin. Mining companies are not making the kind of money that they used to make, which is unbelievable because some of them are making an absolute killing at the moment.
Also because the commodity prices have stabilized and in some instances have actually become much better than they were a couple of years ago.
Yeah, what is the state of mining? If someone said to you, how are we doing? Because mining is such an important pillar of our economy. What would you say?
Yeah, so thank you very much again for inviting me.
Sure.
A lot of people will think that the mining industry is a dying industry. But according to how I believe it, you know, I think that it's still rising. But although if you can look at the statistics in terms of the production and the contribution in terms of you know, the economy and the GDP.
It's huge.
You know, that itself is huge, but it has, you know, it has decreased in terms of if you compare it from previous years and looking at what it is, the state of mining sector currently, you know. We have got challenges in the mining sector in terms of, you know,
We heard him talking about beneficiation.
Yes, policy is in the center of everything. So you find out that the investors or the mining bosses are not happy with the regulation. The introduction of the mining charter is what actually, you know, causes a lot of, you know, I would say that headache in the industry because of the Department of Mineral Resources will speak about, you know, transformation in the mining sector in terms of mining charter introduction, which speaks to 26% in terms of, you know, ownership of the mines and all of that. But, you know, the industry itself is not, you know, keen to actually transform in terms of, you know, increasing that, and although also, you know, in terms of reaching that 26%, there are those mining companies that have, you know, made an improvement in terms of making sure that the ownership is 26%. But there are those that are still, you know, reluctant in terms of, you know, complying with
the
law.
So who's making the most money here? Who's really doing well out of mining at the moment? The mining bosses, the people who have ownership, the government? How does it all work? Who's really
okay?
Who's making the cash? Because there's definitely a lot of gold.
The mining companies are making the cash.
Right.
If you look at, you know, there are a lot of issues in the mining sector, regulatory issues, in terms of monitoring. We have got a lot of tax illicit outflows in the country, right?
Mm.
Currently, if you look, let's look at the contribution to the economy in terms of currently how much percent, you know, the mining sector contributes. It's about 7.5.
Of GDP.
In the past years, 10 years back or something like that.
Like 20.
We used to talk about 12%, even more.
Back in the day, okay. Yeah. I mean, it was like it was double digits for sure.
And also you look at, you know, contribution in terms of employment in the country.
Mm-hmm.
Now we are sitting about 500,000 in terms of the numbers, you know, people that which are absorbed by the industry. It used to be about 1 million. People. So it will tell you that, you know, things are not actually well, but let's look at the profit, right?
Mm.
Profit, and you look at the production itself. It's not actually increasing. Yes, in other commodities it's decreasing. In other commodities it's increasing. But you look at, you know, the tax illicit outflows that which mining companies, they declare less than what they are producing. So for me, itself is stealing from the country. You are actually stealing directly from the economy, which now affects in terms of...
Then it's two kinds of stealing, because the stealing that's happening that you're talking about, illicit outflow, that's a problem, clearly.
Yeah.
But then the tax they do take in is stolen as
yes,
well.
Yes, again, it's stolen on the other side. So
double dipping. It's double dipping.
Yeah,
that's what that is.
You know, we've spoken a little bit about mining and how it's evolved around the world. Is this not also a function of the fact that South Africa has not kept up with the evolution of not just the mining sector, but also we spoke about beneficiation just now, but also lengthening the value chain of what mining can be to South Africa, where we're still simply sitting in the primary part of the value chain?
Correct.
Is it not that we as a country, not just in policy, but also just in terms of having the workforce, having the thought processes,
and the technological
to
developments,
be able to actually have more areas in which we participate, where we're still just mining and sending all of the mineral overseas?
If we monitor properly in terms of regulatory and compliance, we can take the GDP to 20% and plus, right? You talk about beneficiation. Most of our minerals that which we are mining, as raw as they are, we are transporting them outside.
Yeah,
we are shipping them outside to create jobs elsewhere, right? Which that is the, if we introduce, you know, the government have got good policies, but the implementation is flawed, or I can say, you know, it's lacking in terms of it speaks, you know, the NDP speaks to beneficiation and mining 2030. This speaks about beneficiation, you know, introduction of all of these things, which are nice to when you hear them.
But I just want to say, you talk about the NDP. We did speak earlier that we're having this conversation about socialism, because that's important for people who don't know. NDP is
a National Development Plan,
which is a policy of the ANC.
Of the ANC, which speaks to their future in terms of governing the country. Now, when you look at that, it's not only in terms of employment. If you introduce beneficiation, indirectly you're also creating more jobs, and which we are not doing that.
But isn't it also beneficiation? It's fine to I don't think anyone in the country would be upset or offended by the fact that the mine workers, the people of those areas, should benefit from the mines, which are a source of wealth for this country.
Correct.
But it doesn't go to those people. I mean, I don't think like a poor miner in Rustenburg is necessarily scoring on any kind of beneficiation. That's just a fancy word for spreading the wealth around. Mm. And all that happens, that wealth goes to politicians who are well connected.
Yeah.
Hence the
– it's not beneficiation. That's stealing.
Which is also, I mean, one of the first things that you talk about when you talk about the mining charter in – even for you, the emphasis is always on the ownership, whereas the charter actually has quite a number of different areas in which it focuses.
Correct.
But everybody is so focused on getting a piece of the ownership of these mines because they are more interested in their own personal.
Correct.
No, I just wanted to speak on the mining charter. You did mention the mining charter, sir, right? So you said this 23%. Can you just explain
26%.
Can you explain what that is to the people?
Yeah, so basically it's divided into communities, shareholding, and then the employees, the mine workers, I can say, and also entrepreneurs, right?
Entrepreneurs. So who are these people? So these are the entrepreneurs.
Of course,
the
politicians. Yeah. Have you ever seen that?
That's what I wanted you to say. I wanted to say,
it's the well-connected.
Who are these people
first met all those many years ago in Marikana, one of the biggest bones of contentions for that community was also about a fund which had been created by the mining houses in the Platinum Belt, which was under the curatorship of the then Northwest
government.
And all that money is
looted.
That's why I wanted to bring up this 26%,
almost a billion rand.
This transformation that we're leading to. Who does it really benefit? So, the mining charter is beautiful. Again,
In theory.
So like, even if we were to run with the EFF slogan, because that was one of my questions, Bennett, like with the EFF nationalizing the mines, how would that work in your opinion?
But before we even answer that, I think we've come to an important conclusion here. If, Blessings, what you're saying is that we need more execution of the regulations. Yeah. In other words, the laws and the rules that we've made seem to be good, but it's going to politicians anyway and politically connected people, then why bother? Then we shouldn't be complying with those regulations because, frankly, the people who are benefiting from that are the crooks.
Yeah, there are many elements of the mining charter. It speaks to beneficiation. It's one element that which we can look at. Skills development. One element that which, you know, we can look at in terms of, you know, empowering these graduates who are looking for, you know, internships, you know.
That sounds nice, but we're not doing that.
We are not doing that.
So then it's just pie in the sky.
Ownership. If you look at, you spoke about communities that these mining companies are operating. Mm. It's one of the ghost towns ever.
Yeah.
Mm.
It's bad. If you go to mining towns or mining areas where, you know, it's worse. There is poverty. There is everything. Development is not there. The roads are very damaged.
But besides that, I mean, that shouldn't be the responsibility of the mining companies anyway.
It's the responsibility of the government.
But the mining companies, look, they haven't covered themselves in glory and people are suspicious of them for various reasons. I just don't understand why we keep talking about how the private companies need to comply, but we're not looking at where the money goes, even if they do comply.
Right, yeah.
And once we do find out where the money goes, we're like, well, actually, maybe it's better that it's stolen from there. I mean, like Zama Zama miners, for example, who, you know, Pumi and I spoke about just last week with this Bree Street explosion and God knows how much harder it is for those people, because some of them just, they died underground and we never find out about them. Yeah. How much of a threat is illegal mining in this country, especially around Johannesburg? And what are the serious dangers around this?
Leato comes on the show often and talks Velkom. To us about the kind of illegal mining activity that happens in Velkom and the economy you were speaking about, Rika. The economy, the illicit economy that that mining has in that community and how it's warped the way the community operates.
Yeah. Just to not pile on blessings. So like,
I'm just going to add one more thing.
I'm going to add one more question. I'm going to pile on. I'm just adding to the stakeholders in this meeting.
Yeah.
But like, so we saw this illicit mining. So illicit mining is happening. That's why, to your point, that's why the GDP, like, what do you call it? You said it went from 12% to now what, 6?
7.5.
Yeah, 7.5. But now, the gold production is still the same, I think. But one is accounting.
There is challenges, not the same as such, but, you know, not that much difference in terms of production.
So who's regulating the regulators? Okay, who's watching
now,
the watchmen?
The Department of Mineral Resources has got the responsibility to govern in terms of
the fact that is looked after by Gwede Bantashe for a second.
To look at compliance, right? Mm-hmm. I can tell you that we've got regions in each and every province. We've got what you call the Department of Mineral Resource offices. And those people are empowered to make sure that they go into these mining companies and visit them every day and make sure that in terms of compliance, you know, whether it's safety, whether it's anything that has to do with the mine. You know, in terms of, you know, you spoke about the issue of the illicit outflows when coming to illegal mining, right? We are losing about 20 billion rand in terms of taxes, in terms of taxes, and also looking at, sales. You're looking at, so the money is that which is supposed to actually...
Not in the book.
No, just, not in the book.
Just under the table.
Yeah, just that's when coming to taxes, right? Yeah. That 20 billion rand supposed to add it into, you know, the GDP. That itself is not happening. The illegal mining is doing a lot of damages, especially in the areas of Gauteng and other provinces. But I want to tell you this: illegal mining is not only happening in these abandoned mines. But it's also happening within, these well-structured mining companies.
I'm sure.
The likes of Sibanye, I saw a report that, you know, they were complaining about that, you know, they've got also illegal miners underground. I'm a mining engineer by profession. When I was working at Goldfields and also at Sibanye, you know, underground mining, gold mine, We experience those mine, you know, they'll tell us about, be careful of illegal miners. This is how you do when you...
I mean,
you
you're in a tunnel and these guys come out
and you
out
come
of the
across
dark.
Them, they will
in
take,
dark tunnel,
they will take your food and they're armed and they're very dangerous. It's, you know, it's actually organized crime, you know.
Yeah. And this makes me think that the police have a responsibility which they're not able to
either they're not able to do it to regulate these illegal miners, or they are paid to turn a blind eye.
But they're also wise now. They go to the abandoned slime dams. Slime dams is this huge mountain. The slimes, yes. So they go to those dams, they remine them. If they go to these old mine shafts which are abandoned, they go underground and they excavate. You know, they work in a very difficult working conditions, you know, because there's no ventilation down there, you know. There's just scavenging gold around but they are very organized, you know. There's supply for food, there's supply for transportation. They can stay underground.
If it's organized, are there kingpins? And if they're kingpins, then are those people connected to legitimate mining, or are they people who are connected to other stuff?
No, it's not legitimate mining.
But there must be a way in which they connect back into the legal part of the business. Because once you have mined the gold, you even can't if you just are
how does it leave the
once
country?
You have refined it, I mean, we you have the, to we get it back into
gold mafia documentary.
Yeah. Right.
It's a guide to everything, to what is happening.
But this is the point, is that it leaks back into the system.
Yeah, somehow it goes back into making sure that that money is washed properly.
Absolutely.
And, back to, you know.
So who's
but what we are talking this? About is we're actually also talking about a systemic failure of both the private and the public sector here, because all of the security systems that mining companies have in place, they are unable to safeguard their own material. The fact that they do leave their mines unguarded, even when they are no longer mining in those areas. DRD down just in towards Krugersdorp. Yeah. I was in that area on Monday.
Yeah.
The fact that they leave it, they just abandon it. And those shafts are still available to be mined. And don't forget the fact that the people who go under there to do that mining are former employees of these mining companies.
Yeah, so we
the government is failing in that they are not doing enough in terms of policing. Bagabantu, you talk about the fact that they are either being paid to turn a blind eye or they are not there to begin with.
Yeah.
This is what you're talking about. It's a systemic failure on both sides. And the truth of the matter is that it's a very lucrative failure for both sides. Mm.
So isn't it convenient that they are turning a blind eye? I don't know. But like, just to shift the topic here, like De Beers, right? De Beers, what? After 10 years, they found, they started producing diamonds. Like, do you know anything about that? Can you explain that to us?
In terms of
like the peers, when they how did they find diamonds in the Venetia mine?
They have been mining, diamond for a very long time.
Yeah.
So, in terms of the what you call the diamond production is doing well.
Yeah.
Commodities across gold is doing well. Look also at coal is doing well.
Yeah.
But by the way, South Africa, we speak about other commodities.
PGMs we have got
the PGMs that are doing well, which we have got the largest reserves in the world, right? In terms of vanadium, the PGMs, the chrome and others, you know, we have
manganese.
Got the largest, you know, I was reading this other document from the Mineral Council about, you know, what we have in terms of, the reserves in the country in terms of the amount itself. You know, it's estimated about $2.5 trillion, you know, in terms of what is still there underground, all right? We have got a lot of potential in the country in terms of making use of our minerals to change the status quo of our people, taking them out of poverty. But the question is, are we doing that? We are not doing that. We are speaking about the illegal mining. Illegal mining in terms of the solution and what to do is to legalize it. Because it's illegal.
And tax it.
And tax it, right?
Yeah.
And now you look at these mining areas where these illegal miners are going, for example, these abandoned mines. It's those mines which were never rehabilitated. You know, one of the regulation about the mining charter, it speaks to rehabilitation. When you are done with mining,
what do you do to the environment?
You close that place, you plant trees, you make it the way you found it, right? So they are not doing exactly that, right? Where, for example, a mining company can hand it to small scale miners, you know, give them licensing, and therefore, you know, you also educate them in terms of where to sell those, how to trade those those minerals. You formalize the industry. And now, you know, as much as we are saying that as black people, we want 26%, you know, of ownership through
the beneficiation
and the mining sector and all of that. But we need to start somewhere, okay, in terms of the learning how, the The learning how is very, very important.
We need
through this small scale licensing, you know, we are able to learn through.
And frankly, if we did the small scale licensing, there are many more opportunities that become created for small businesses, you know, small mining outfits that people, for example, could take the silt in the silt dams that you were talking about. They could specialize in that and they could end up drawing a whole lot more value out of mines that have already been processed. There's still gold in them.
I had a question. Why do we still have mine dumps? Aren't the mining companies
to speak? They're very, very much, very many fewer, if that's even correct language.
That doesn't
There are less mine dumps around Johannesburg.
Compared to before.
Yeah.
But because now they have been given to some of these mining companies, old mining companies, they are selling those to other mining companies. If you go to Randfontein, for example, I saw one slime dam about 7 years ago. Now it's no more because they are reprocessing.
Even as you drive down the N1,
they are actually reprocessing that with the new technology beneficiation. So they're extracting gold out of it. So that itself also can be a mechanism to actually give the small scale miners this.
I want to know what we are doing right, Blessings. We've spent a lot of time talking about all of the things that we're getting wrong.
Yeah.
What is there anything that is being gotten right in the sector?
Quite a few.
Okay.
Reason being is because of the Department of Mineral Resources is in the center of everything. You see, if we get compliance and regulation right in terms of monitoring and evaluation, making sure that these mining companies, you know, we force them to, you know, to comply. That itself is not happening. The communities, let's start where the mining is happening. These mining communities are individuals that which they take the first punch when coming to environmental issues in those mining areas. The poverty that which, you know, the trucks are passing every day, the dust and everything. It has to start there. Right, making sure that they comply in terms of, you know, making sure that the communities wherever they are, they benefit in terms of skills development is also very important.
What about the unions? Because the mine workers union used to be a very,
very powerful
thing. We of course know that they've split up. They're now different unions representing different people. A lot of controversy around that, especially around Marikana. You remember that was where it all came.
There have
to
been
head.
Improvements when coming to communication between the unions and the mining bosses.
Okay, so the unions and the mining bosses are now getting along better.
Yes, it's much better compared to before.
But are the unions doing what they're actually there to do? I mean, these union members are paying fees to the mining unions. The mining unions have become massive investment houses.
Political driven.
They become political as well. They're highly politicized. They've got people in the upper echelons who are also highly politicized. I don't know that there's as much value for a mine worker now as there was in the 90s or in the 80s even.
I agree.
And they were tremendously powerful organizations that could do things for workers' rights. It's become just another greedy extension of corporate capitalism.
Yeah.
I'm afraid, and I can't believe I'm saying that as someone who doesn't. I don't
because
particularly
some of
like
them,
unions.
Some of them now they own
and
shares.
You love capitalism.
So now, like, I'm going to try to bridge the point from the negative to the positive through Sispumi's point, right? So Sispumi did point out that both the private and government are failing at regulation and improving these communities.
Yeah.
So both private companies and government is failing these communities.
They are both failing.
And so are the unions, which are supposed to be looking after the workers.
Correct.
So government is failing its people.
Yeah.
The private companies are failing its employees. Yeah. And the unions are failing its members.
And then you get people like the current president of the country, who was a former mine owner.
Shop steward.
No, but hang on. He was also formerly a mine owner.
Yeah.
And in Marikana, he's still got some questions to answer. We know that there are huge problems with the complicity, the lying in bed together of private corporations, of mining
and
unions, and of government. They basically are sitting there making sure they can skim as much cream off the top as possible.
That's the new tripartite alliance.
The workers and the ordinary people of South Africa who don't see any of that value.
So now what I'm saying, Blessing, is how do we improve that in terms of regulation? Because I went to Vits, right? There's a big, big building, big, beautiful building called the Chamber of Mines, where these mining engineers come from, and you see droves of them.
It was the beginning of Vits, Baba, out there in mm-hmm. out there in Kimberley mm-hmm. was yeah. really to provide the sector with workers, with engineers.
So where is the transformation? Where are those graduates going in order to fix the system that we have discovered throughout this entire chat?
I'm broken? One of the graduates in the mining sector. So I'm a mining engineer, so I know the industry, right? We are producing talent. The universities are every year they are producing students. But if I can tell you that most of those graduates now, they are unemployed.
So how do we fix it? Because these are the people. These are the people.
Why?
These are the people.
Hold
that,
on. Sorry. Why are they unemployed?
They are unemployed because some of them, they, if I can tell you, they don't even have practicals. They're still looking. There are those who have graduated even 5 years back, and they are still scavenging for practicals. The mines can only, you know, employ a certain number of individuals. And now you also look at the fourth industrial revolution is here, mechanization in mm-hmm. the mining sector. You know, mines are mechanizing in terms of, you know, machines are now, you know, doing the work instead of, you know, individuals. And so that's basically a challenge. Now the question would be, how do we modernize and move from, you know, old operation in terms of, you know, how we were operating before to a mechanized system. So itself now, the government has to come up with a plan together with the stakeholders, which is the private sector, the mining bosses, to say, how do we solve this issue and to make sure that, you know, we absorb this and retrain, maybe, very, very important. Retrain these graduates who are coming out of the university. And that also speaks to the content itself that we are getting from the university.
So back to my earlier statement that South Africa has not evolved.
It has not evolved.
Have not
Why are we?
Yeah,
so we're still producing miners.
If you look at, you know, the content that which is still absorbing from the university is the conventional, which is the one of operations, not a mechanized one.
Mm.
So the fourth industrial revolution is here, and we also need to change.
Okay, but you all say it's not working, but it's working for the people who are involved.
Point the take.
No, sure. So I don't think, and I mean, it must put you in a difficult position sometimes because of the job that you have, trying to bring these interests together.
Mm.
But it seems to me like we're the only ones. The ordinary people of South Africa, the only ones who are sitting there going, this isn't working. It's working for the mining bosses. It's working for the unions. It's working for the government.
It's working for the Zamazamas.
And working for the Zamazamas. So why the hell would any of them want to change
the system?
Right?
Why would you want to change?
You're basically
the system?
Fighting a losing battle, which is why I appreciate you coming in here.
Of course.
You, by the way, have been very controversial on social media.
Yeah.
You make a lot of noise there. Someone asked in the comments just now, is this the Blessings who makes a lot of noise on social media? Do you get any trouble for that? Do you get called in and asked to please like take your foot off the gas a little bit? You're criticizing government, you're criticizing the unions, you're criticizing the mine owners.
Yes, of course. You know, there'll be that one who says, you're talking too much, you must keep quiet.
Yeah, well, don't listen.
So
to
now,
them.
But
don't
one of
them.
The things.
The reason
is,
we wanted is, you here is because
it's about, you know, it's about talking about issues that which you see, right, mm-hmm. in terms of the government. The government of the ANC has not been perfect. There's a lot of issues there, right?
Mm.
I think there's people that which are self-centered who do not care about the people, but they are there. You know, we've got people who are in big positions and influential positions, but they don't care about ordinary individuals. They just want to be there.
One of them who talks like this.
I was talking up to someone saying, you know, these politicians, you see them fighting up there, but when they are together, they are not fighting, you know.
They are together.
In fact, they are friends, right?
Yeah.
It's just
That's
a show
they
that they
comrades.
Put up for us to fight amongst ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
So what I'm trying to say is that, you know, the corruption has damaged the reputation of this country, you know, and even investors, you know, they are very skeptical when coming to, you know, bringing money into their country and investing. You know, if you look at the investment in terms of, you know, foreign direct investment into the country, it's not the same as before, especially in the mining sector, because of the mismanagement of funds. You're talking about that, you know, the stealing of money is not only the private sector through tax illicit outflows, but mm-hmm. also in the public sector in terms of how the government is running this country. You know, budget every year in and out, you know, it's been read to say this is how much we are going to contribute, for an example, to this, you know, project, to this project in this place. But all that money do not precipitate and reach the people, you know, because of, you know,
everyone must get its cut
of corruption. Yeah. So as you are saying that, you know, we can be vocal on social media in terms of, you know, pointing out this mismanagement of funds by the country, you know, leaders. Yeah, so I think that we need, you know, we need to do that. We need to no, point fingers if someone is doing wrong.
It's 8 o'clock.
Yeah,
no, let's go back about you. You've got lots on your mind.
I've got lots on my mind. Yeah. So number one, this thing of politicians and cadres and comrades and all this thing needs to stop. Number one, these people are public servants. That's why we have a right to be calling them out on social media. We have a right to be picketing. We have a right to be calling them out all the time. The fact that Julius Malema wants to nationalize the mines is not working. The socialism is not working. This is proven fact. You are talking about illicit mining. Exactly. Because we have these systems. You're saying, like, what Julius Malema is not, what he's saying is not new.
Nationalization of mines cannot work.
It's not new. It's already, because even the 26% is not working.
Yeah.
Because of the corruption and whatnot.
I do think we've got to wrap this up, but I do want to thank you for coming in, because we wanted to focus on mining. It's a hugely important part of our economy. You've shed some light on things. Unfortunately, some of the light that we've shed on things doesn't give us a very pretty picture, but you're honest about it, which I appreciate. And you can follow Blessings on Twitter and other social media. You'll find he's very vocal about this stuff. And if you're interested in mining, you need to pay attention to all the sources, and
Thank
he's a good
you
one.
Very much.
But I also appreciate you wearing the yellow and black for our, you know, Cliff Central colors. I like that a lot.
Mascot.
All right, everybody. That's all we got time for this morning, but thank you for joining us. Blessings, thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you very
Pumi,
much.
Pumi Bakabantu, we'll see you in a couple of days, and have an awesome Thursday, everybody. We'll
thank
see
you
tomorrow at 6
Woo-hoo.
O'clock. Cheers.
Thank you.
CliffCentral.com.